The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The sex revolution, it appears, is here to stay. No matter how you look at it, it does affect you, the viewer, you, the hearer, you, the reader, you, the person, whether you're father, mother, child, or grandparent. The sex revolution, with steady streams of prurient literature, the associated forms of violence that we see in entertainment, motion pictures, television, books, novels, magazines, peep shows, all of the entirety of the sex revolution since World War II, with the changing, shifting patterns of the American home and marriage that are being directly affected, the rising juvenile delinquency, the emergence of the beat generation, America's campuses in turmoil, the entire lifestyle of a nation grown fat, grown great, and grown perhaps gross, filled with lethargy, an almost inability, a determination not to sacrifice individually or nationally in the face of potential national emergencies, and the sex revolution is where it's at. Sex affects almost every aspect of American society today. It affects lifestyle, friends, attitudes, business, homes. And it ultimately is going to determine, to a great extent, how happy or how miserable your life is going to be. The sex revolution is seen not only in elderly ladies' burning bras and women's lib, it's also seen all the way down into orphanages and illegitimate unwanted children and the institutionalization of thousands of people's lives as a result of this personal sexual anarchy that people have become almost totally embarked upon in the last decade or so in the United States. Now, sometimes the effects of this sex revolution that is all about us are mental loneliness and alienation, anxiety, frustration, jealousies, angers, hatred, and sometimes mass murder. As a matter of fact, some years ago, police agencies were telling me that the majority of homicides were found within the home or very close friends, and many of them did have sex connotations. Sometimes its effects, that is, of the sexual revolution, are physical, that of the venereal disease that is now rampant and epidemic in our country, sterility. And some of that is psychological, blindness, crippling, or abortion. But whatever, there are effects, and those effects do afflict our society. Now, most people have no idea what their personal behavior is in regard to the morals crises of our country. They don't have any real clear-cut concept. They more or less intend, I think, to withhold judgment until they see the ultimate outcome of friends' lives or of their own. But the clergy is out in the forefront in this morals rebellion or revolution, the sex revolution, by even urging, in many cases, that a little adultery is good for a marriage. The point is, it's also affecting the very moral fiber and hence the strength of the United States of America.
Do you feel that your standard of morality is anybody else's business?
I don't really think so. It's a matter of what a person thinks, his own opinions, the way he lives his life. I think everybody's entitled to do their own thing, so to speak. Being from not from L.A., or I've always been under the influence of Chicago environment. And being out here, I've found that morality is just not what it is in Chicago, to put it that way. It's more open here.
Do you feel, in your own case, that whatever standard of morality you have is your own business?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I don't like to be too critical. I know, at times, sometimes. But I shouldn't be, because I think we all have to live our own life.
If it hurts other people, you know, it's immoral. If it's so that, like they say, between consenting adults, I don't know, you know, I think it's... I don't make judgments on other people's lives.
Well, yes and no. I mean, to a certain extent it isn't. And again, according to how I conduct it, you know, I mean, morals has a wide variety, you know, if you... associated with another man's wife, I would say that's immoral, but if a girlfriend is not, you know, thinking unattached, you're thinking unattached, you know, behind closed doors, nothing wrong with, you know, as long as it's kept within decent, you know, it gets out of hand, and I guess, I mean, I think two married couples should stick with each other. If you're going to be single, be married, you know.
Do you feel that your particular standard, whatever it may be, of morality is anyone else's business?
No, actually I don't. What I do with my own time, like I said, as long as I'm not stepping on anybody else, is mine.
Would you accord that same privilege to anyone else?
Sure.
okay, that would provide perhaps a welter of varying degrees of morality. Would there be any possibility of adverse effects from these various standards?
I assume right now you're talking about sexual morality.
Yes.
I can't see, as long as no one's doing anything to harm society, you know, as long as they're doing it in the privacy of their own home or whatever, I can't see any adverse anything.
So most people seem to feel it's your own personal decision, do your own thing, and this excuse that people use, I've heard coming back time and again, as long as nobody else gets hurt, as long as it's just you, as long as it's between two consenting adults, as long as it's in the privacy of your home, and this and that, as long as society isn't affected, but just 1 minute out there. It seems like there's a certain conflict of opinion in this type of thing, because this same type of individual, and I don't mean to put down the people that we interview on the street, because after all, that's only a sampling of opinion that is meant to be a cross-section of average Americans of various races and backgrounds and ages and the like that we try to be fair in doing. It seems that when an issue comes very close to home, whether it's a changing of a zoning requirement in your neighborhood, or whether it's the school milk program or the busing laws or something that is on the ballot, that these very same people seem to become very, very much a part of society, and they instantly want to say, now, I, as a taxpayer, as a member of society, and they really become vociferous about their place in society. But then they tend to treat society as a broad, general, bunch of faceless mob type of a thing when it's something about individual rights, when it has to do with the sexual revolution. Well, everybody is part of society, and we live today with our instant communication of reading about the latest sensational mass murder in California, whether we live in Maine or in Florida, an area of time in American development where what everybody does and what each individual does in one greater or lesser degree affects all the rest of us. America's moral problems are not an issue of individual rights or of do your own thing, because the effects are borne by all of those in society, either directly or indirectly. And sometimes illegitimate children and disease epidemics and the like are something that are a stigma, not just upon society, but a tremendous tax burden. Who knows what the consequences are to the individual so born in such a non-union. From higher taxes to support the local free VD clinics that have to be paid for by the taxpayers, to the mental trauma of broken homes, America is suffering. All of society is suffering. And one person's morality does make a difference. So the old saying that no man is an island rings out truer and louder than ever before.
I contracted it twice from the same fellow.
Luckily, I haven't had a VD yet.
I contracted gonorrhea from my husband.
In our sophisticated world, catching venereal disease is about as bothersome as the common cold. Treatment centers abound. Illicit sex carries with it unwanted side effects. VD, forced marriages, abortion, or unwanted children, and frequently divorce. These have led some to conclude that all sex is wrong. What does God, who created man and woman, have to say about this important and often misunderstood subject? Be sure to request your free copy of the valuable booklet, Is Sex Sin? You'll find it very informative. Is Sex Sin? For your free copy, call Ambassador College, toll free, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
It's been said that America represents about 200 million egos, and I think that's absolutely true. We are basically a rebellious society. Now, in some ways, that attitude or that spirit, I guess, of an unwillingness to just go along with anything that comes along in the form of some type of totalitarianism, of some type of control by forces from abroad or within, which would threaten to remove some of our individual rights, is good. And I would not choose any other form of government, man-made, humanly devised government, on the face of the earth other than that that is in the United States of America. But I think that statement about 200 million egos must also be cranked into our consciousness as we view the sex revolution that is underway, because this thing of the individual reigning supreme as never before is where the sex revolution is at. Do your own thing, a popular statement that came along with the hip next Beat Generation revolution of the mid and the late 60s. I put it this way, do unto others, or do it unto others, before they get a chance to do it unto you. Whether you're talking about competition in business, or whether you're talking about persons supposed inalienable sexual rights, it seems to be the attitude of people that we must pursue liberty, life, and of course the enjoyment of one's senses, no matter what the consequences are, as long as we can keep it on an individual basis and we don't get in trouble with the law, even if those same rights are taken away from somebody else. The problem with this is that the people who are being robbed the most are experiencing terrible results. Are members of families, both real and potential, who could be experiencing fabulous lives, stability of home and solidity and balance of mind and emotion, prosperity in their jobs, a sense of reward and fulfillment, a deep, abiding, fulfilling, and rewarding home life. And instead, these same people, as we'll show in a series of programs not too far down the line ahead of us on stress and on the growth of the big American inner urban megalopolises and then the sort of implosion, explosion of our societies into the outer areas, away from the inner urban areas, all the problems of crime, of drug abuse, also related to the sex revolution. But the people who are trying so frantically to reach out and enjoy themselves are the people who are suffering the most. That this individual search for the total ultimate enjoyment of one's own senses is leading toward wretched, distorted, perverted, twisted minds, broken sometimes, horribly afflicted physical bodies, and wrecked homes and marriages. And these are the result of broken laws. There are hidden, unseen laws that very few people seem to understand that do affect marriage and family life. And America is sacrificing today the family for the individual instead of the other way around. Put it the other way, America is sacrificing the millions of little Johnnies and Susies while one individual is on a pursuit for personal pleasure. This is especially true in the area of sex. The rights of the family to expect fidelity and loyalty from its members is no longer really demanded by society, and it doesn't seem to be a great stigma placed upon anyone, where it used to be something that would keep a person out of public office, might even ruin his business, might mean a loss of friends and prestige in the community. Today, it isn't even looked upon that way. Sex laws are not looked upon as something to protect the parents and children and home, but something which deprives the individual of his own personal pleasures. The individual is paramount on the scene when all the members of the family should be. A family unit involves giving, not getting. Few are willing to give up any of their personal rights, even for their own families, and family unit is one place where certain rights must be given up for certain higher privileges. Individual rights must become subservient to the rights of the family members. Not many families live as families anymore today. This is not being done. Consequently, the family unit can't survive. It simply won't. In a moment, I'll be quoting some of the foremost psychologists or sociologists who have said as far back as 1947 that America was headed into precisely the trauma of the upset of family life that we see around us today. So the family, which is the only social unit capable of supplying so many of the needs of children and adults alike, is being threatened from within as well as from without. From within, you find parental neglect today, broken or unhappy homes, lack of respect from both parents and children for one another, and individuals going their own separate ways, doing their own thing without regard for the welfare of the parents, children, brothers, or sisters. The strong family bonds simply are disappearing. And all of this is being done in the name of love and the individual's personal development, especially in regards to one's own private, personal sex behavior, which people insist is their own private business and does not affect anybody else. They almost get to the point to where they say, it's mine, I ought to do with it what I want to, but I don't want to get clandestine or have any double entendre on the program. But sex was designed by a creator God to be used in marriage for two main specific purposes, one of which even the churches have failed to see, and that is to bind husband and wife together in a spiritual as well as a moral and physical bond, which actually solidifies and makes all the stronger the family and the marital ties. And that, which is a spiritual as well as a physiological bind, is something that most people don't really even see in the sex relationship. They look upon it as a purely, almost an animalistic, a physiological relationship and a physical exercise. As a matter of fact, many of the, I think you can call them influences in men's magazines, women's magazines, the articles on sex, what is your sex quotient, all of the talk shows where they have famous stars that are now going for the ninth or tenth marriage and so on. The impact of all of this, especially on the American male, is that the sex act is a performance. It's, you know, what's your sex quotient, asked one article sometime back in Reader's Digest, reprinted from what magazine, I forget. And people want to know, well, how good is she? How good is he? What is your quotient? And so it's looked upon as a performance, not as the deepest expression of outgoing concern and love in marriage for the binding together of a stable, solid home, the protection of children, and the fact that then children can grow up in a stable environment to be mature, stable adults. Oh, no, but it's looked upon as a kind of an animalistic performance of some sort. Mature, stable adults beget a mature, stable society. And today, the sex revolution espouses the opposite of that. It espouses individualism, and that means sexual anarchy. The sex revolution affects more than just the private individual, no matter what people argue on the street. Carl C. Zimmerman, a world-renowned sociologist, saw or foresaw some of the problems we would be facing. He wrote back in 1947 and stated that when the United States began to get into this family crisis, the nation would eventually experience the effects of family crisis, which would be, he said, widespread adultery, marital breakdown, juvenile delinquency, and rising child crime. Zimmerman and others like him who have studied the family as their life's work speak out on the breakdown of the family and are warning us about the problems ahead if we continue on our present course. Will we continue on our present course when America, as never before, needs a return to a solid, stable work ethic to replace the so-called values, the permissiveness, the new morality, sexual license, individuality, the pursuit of individual pleasures with the qualities of thrift, of honesty, of justice, of fidelity, of faithfulness, of trust, and of hard work?
The mighty Roman Empire had everything. Plenty of leisure time. Their own new morality. Enormous military might. The religion of their choice. Political freedom. What went wrong? Read The Modern Romans, a 93-page lesson of history ignored. This free booklet examines the five major factors behind the fall of ancient Rome. How do these same conditions affect our country today? The Modern Romans comes to you free of charge as a public service. Send for it now. The Modern Romans asks, can we afford the grandeur of Rome? For your free copy, call Ambassador College, toll free, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Personal anarchy and all of the orgiastic exercises of individuals in the United States who seem to feel that morality and responsibility and certainly attention to God's laws is just nowheresville. All of this business is for the good time. It's for when you're fat and happy and satisfied. It's for when everything's going well. It is the curse of an affluent, overfed, indulgent, and personally anarchistic society. It remains to be seen, then, as America moves from one, I would call it, phase of a national crisis to another. And as we will begin to see, as I've been saying for so long, for a decade and more, a great, huge national emergency looming in the offing, going not only from an energy crisis and fuel shortages, but on into the potential of drought and of severe food shortages and perhaps economic collapse. As we move from one worsening phase of national calamity to the next, we will begin to see that people will be less equipped than ever before for facing a national emergency if we cannot repent of some of our individual and collective national sins prior to that time. Now, Zimmerman proved to be somewhat of a prophet when he predicted that the United States would face this great family crisis by the latter part of the century. He wrote in his book, Back in 1947, I'm going to quote rather extensively from it. It's called Family and Civilization. He said, "The United States, as well as the other countries of Western Christendom, will reach the final phases of a great family crisis between now and the last of this century. At that time, the social consequences of this crisis will approach a maximum. This crisis," he said, "will be identical in nature to the two previous crises in Greece and Rome. The results will be much more drastic in the United States because, being the most extreme and inexperienced of the aggregates of Western civilization, it will take its first real sickness most violently. Efforts to meet this situation," he said, "in the United States will probably be very exaggerated. We will probably try all the remedies suggested or tried in Greek and Roman civilization, profiting perhaps but little from the mistakes already made in these periods. The violence and abruptness of the changes will probably be extreme indeed." He went on to warn that as each nation progresses through three distinct stages of the family, then these things begin to happen. When a nation reaches that third stage of a complete anarchistic breakdown, with each member of the family doing his own thing, the family unit breaks down, and so too does the nation. The nation follows the example of the family. That as you have strong families, viable, powerful families with a work ethic, knit together strongly with bonds of mutual respect, of honesty, of fidelity, of trust, of faith, of faithfulness, and of hard work, so you have a nation that is bound together with those same qualities of what is called a work ethic. But when the nation is on an orgiastic pleasure binge in search of its own thing, and the family has led the way. Another noted sociologist, Gerald Leslie, writes and describes Zimmerman's third and final phase by saying that it's both cause and effect of decay in social life. In its later stages, there appears elimination of the real meaning of the marriage ceremony. And then you see widespread adultery, acceptance of sexual perversions, easy divorce, childlessness, and delinquency. And there's a great deal of that, along with impotence today. Concepts of loyalty and self-sacrifice disappear. Personal selfishness replaces them. And under these conditions, the family simply can't carry out its basic functions. It isn't really a family anymore. It's a glorified motel where people go and come as they please. The experience of the past nations, city states, is not going to be learned by the United States of America, though, because we have never heeded a warning. We're going to have to learn, apparently, the same way other nations have had to learn. And there are examples of this I'm coming to in the last very few decades. Some nations, which formerly were our enemies, then our friends, presently cooling a little bit, are yet going again to become our enemies. And those nations have gone through a tremendous swinging of this extreme of the human pendulum. Sounds like Zimmerman then was somewhat of a prophet, doesn't it? Because he wrote back in 1947, just as the United States was emerging from World War II. But actually, what Mr. Zimmerman was prophesying was irresponsible sexual behavior and the breaking of God's law. There is a creator, living, divine, spirit being, God Almighty, who has given to humankind His Word, which is nothing more than the handbook about human behavior, telling us what we are and how we work, how we ought to live, how we, the human being, the human creature, best function, what is best for us and what is not so good for us. He demands the best for us. He says, "Oh, that there were such an heart in them that they would obey me, they would keep my laws and fear me, that it might go well with them and with their children." Talking about the family, them and their children, forever and ever. He says, "I wish they'd obey my laws because my laws are for their good." Nobody, not even a collection of some of the greatest and most respected evangelists and churchmen of the United States, is going to dare stand up and say, "America obeys God's laws. America is a commandment-keeping country. We obey the first commandment, the second, the fourth, the sixth, and the seventh. We obey the tenth about not coveting and lusting after our neighbor and his wife." Oh, no. Nobody, not one individual and not a collection of individuals wearing their collars around backward, is going to stand up and tell you that America is a God-fearing nation of commandment-keeping people. But they can tell you that America is a nation of broken homes, of toppling morals, of rampant venereal disease, of illegitimacy, of sexual repressions and pressures leading toward frigidity and impotence, of the complete destructive breakup of the home structure and therefore the social structure, and eventually the collapse of our civilization. They can tell you that, and they'll be telling you the truth. If they fail to see cause and effect, that's not my fault, because the Bible does see cause and effect. It says directly in many, many scriptures in the Bible that as we rebel against God's laws, especially in a sexual revolution affecting the home and the family, The nation is in the greater jeopardy. It's repeated over and over again. Frederick Laplace, another noted sociologist, said, when a family system gets into trouble, the nation usually gets into trouble at the same time. I remind you that the families in the homes of West Germany and of Japan were tempered together out of national disaster and calamity. And as those nations began to break up their furniture, to burn them in some of the blast ovens to get their industries going, the family learned how to sacrifice. If it was a little German boy out in the middle of the park somewhere in West Berlin grubbing up the roots of the trees they'd already cut down in that disastrous winter of 1946 to carry it trundling home or even over his shoulder so Mom could have some wood in the family kitchen to cook with, there was a family that under a terrible trial of a national calamity was welded together through mutual privation and hardship. They returned to a work ethic. Those Germans, for about two solid decades, were cheerfully swinging those lunch pails on their hands as they trucked down those streets of those Western German cities with a song on their lips, going to work, hard work, 65, 72, and then finally 56 and more hours per week. Sure, they began to have unions. Sure, they began to strike and want a higher standard of living. That's a human pendulum, too. But the point is, the family grew strong, and it clung to itself. And here is what you have. National calamity? Well, then it's not time for sexual licentiousness and the destruction of the family. It's time for sacrifice. It's time for families to cling together. It's time for them to begin to depend upon each other's strength. Will we do that prior to a national calamity? I don't honestly believe we will. I really don't. I know we've got to be warned. I know that God says, cry aloud, spare not, show my people their sins, lift up your voice like a trumpet. He says in the book of Jeremiah, and I'll conclude with this, how shall I pardon you for this? Your children have forsaken me and sworn by them that are no gods when I fed them to the full. And we're a nation of affluence, now beginning to have it taken away from us. Then they committed adultery and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. They were as fed horses in the morning, everyone made after his neighbor's wife. I believe the United States of America has gone the full circle. From that earlier work ethic that made us so strong before and during World War II and just after, this fantastic age of affluence, of immorality, and of licentiousness, the sex revolution, and the destruction of the American family. You write for these booklets, Your Marriage Can Be Happy, and Is Sex Sin? In the midst of our mad sex revolution, it's time you ask the question, is sex sin? It seems to make little difference to people that famine, starvation, and disease lurk in India or Pakistan, or that the United States of Europe nears reality, that Japan is a supergiant. What we want to think about today is sex. Forget international news and climactic traumas for nations. What about sex? Look at the magazines on the, well, on the other hand, maybe you shouldn't. And I think you know why. But look at the magazines you see by even their covers, and there has been an avalanche of magazines competing with Playboy these days, so that even little children who used to be able to look at Captain Midnight and Superman now can look at things that really blow your mind. And the booklet is free of charge. There is no price. If you write for it immediately, the address is Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your request with the call letters of this radio station to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.